This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
1200, recapping yesterday and giving you a head start on today.
The Boston Celtics, who were a game under 500 in January, are now one game from the NBA Finals. The final score in Game 5, Boston 93, Miami 80.
In the box.
Down to Dubois. To Barzell. Walks in, waits, feeds it across. Matheson scores! Drake Matheson has won it for Canada. All the way back from 3-0 down. Canada's on to the semifinals at the World Hockey Championship.
TSN 1200.
Second and hold. McKinnon. He lets it fly. He scores! The Mac attack is back, Jack!
Down low, Nathan McKinnon. Puck rolled on him. He gets it back. He scores!
The Mac attack is definitely back, Jack!
Rantanen and taps it back for Nathan McKinnon. Further back for Tave. Shot on. Hit.
Score! Oh, Captain! My Captain!
Letty into a ton of traffic. Deflected puck.
Picked up. He scores! Vladimir Tarasenko!
Again, Colorado dropping four back. They score!
On a great feed from Buchnevich.
Shot near wing.
Toropchenko there. They score! We're tied at Ball Arena in Denver.
McKinnon with two goals. McKinnon in between the circles. McKinnon,
he scores! Oh, my goodness gracious me! Nathan McKinnon, throw the chapeau! The Mac attack is back with a goal and a play that you will hear and see over and over and over and over.
The Tarasenko, he shoots, they score!
They've tied it up! It's the bailout at Ball Arena! The Blues have tied it again!
It was Tyler Bozak that got an assist on the Pat Maroon goal 2-3 years ago.
He scores! Tyler Bozak in overtime! You can bring out the Zamboni! The St. Louis Blues are coming home, and they're bringing the Avalanche with them.
Now with Chris Stevenson, here's Graham Creech.
Oh, good afternoon. The Mac attack is back. Everyone's waiting for McKinnon McDavid in round three, but the Flames and the Blues still have something to say about that, and it's bath time in Finland, where typically you'd be looking for a sauna. Drake Batherson scoring in overtime to give Canada the 4-3 overtime win after falling from behind 3-0 and coming back. They're off to the semifinals on Saturday. I got to start by saying good afternoon to my man, Chris Stevenson. CJ, it's been a while since you've hosted your own show. How are you?
I am fantastic. Hello, everybody. Wow, what a hockey game. And who would have thought a Leaf playing in a role in a team blowing a big lead?
I knew you were going there. Before we get into that more, I'm going to pull the opposite of a Lloyd and say, good afternoon, Kenny. How are you? Great intro there. You had a lot packed in that intro.
I don't know if you can refer to it as a Lloyd now. I'm going to refer to it as an AJ. Yesterday, I had to introduce myself.
Wow.
Oh, I was listening live to that, actually.
Yeah, needed to introduce myself to correct them, on something that they had said. I don't remember, but... anyway, good morning. Hello. Good to see everybody. CJ, I can kind of see you on Zoom, so that works out.
Hey there.
CJ, I haven't seen him in a while. Is he going with his summer beard? He's got the big
beard. Let me go take a look. Hold on one second.
Well, Kenny checks on that, CJ. Honestly, I was going to bring...
Looks good.
Kenny Ellen from across the hall looks good. Attaboy, CJ. You know I'm a fan of the beard. Before what we just witnessed right here on TSN 1200 happened with the Canada game against Sweden in the quarters of the World Championships, I was going to bring this up today anyways and just comment on or ask why so often in big games we see teams surrender 3-goal leads. And it happened last night, 3-0.
Yeah.
And it's the Avalanche. And I know they were playing the Blues, who are, in my opinion, the second best team in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about good teams, but... 3-0 there. We've seen it throughout the postseason, the regular season. Then we see it in the quarterfinals today with Canada. What's with the worst lead in hockey? How are we seeing this happen so often, CJ?
Well, I it used to be 2-0 was the worst lead in hockey. Going back to, you know, 80s and the 90s. I mean, the 80s, lots of scoring, but we're seeing a resurgence in scoring now. Then we went to 90s, was kind of like the dead puck era. And it allowed teams, even when they had a 1-0 lead, to completely shut things down, right? And now since the, since the change in the officiating, which is, started after the shootout, started with the shootout era, the salary cap era. I think with the way they call things now, it just makes it easier for offensive players to be able to create. So, you know, you put that together with, I just think that there's so many great young players in the NHL. I don't think there's ever been as many good young players in the National Hockey League as there is now.
Chance.
I just think the skill level of the whole league has gone up, right? When you think about fourth lines from even the late 90s to what fourth lines are now, in many cases, you've got some guys who can score 15 or 20 goals playing on a lot of fourth lines in the National Hockey League. So I just think the overall skill level in the National Hockey League has gone up. So the opportunity to score goals at any given time on the ice is greater. Combine that with the rules. I think that's why we've seen the worst lead in hockey tick up from 2-0 to 3-0 now. And it's, you know, as old as hockey itself, Graham and Kenny, I think it's a mindset that guys get into, right? When you get that lead, teams sit back. As much as coaches want to say, and you'll even hear players say it, you know, we want to keep the pedal down, we want to keep pushing. I think it's just human nature to kind of sit back and err on the side of playing defense, of not getting caught deep, right? You don't want to make that mistake that leads to a goal. But you flip that around, and by sitting back, you're inviting disaster. In my mind, the approach, the philosophy should be press forward anyway. Try and get the fourth goal if you're up 3-0, because if you sit back, you know for sure you're going to give one up. That's what the body of evidence tells us game after game, year after year, that if you sit back and let the other team pin its ears back and come at you, you're probably going to give up a goal. My attitude now would be might as well press for the fourth. And if you end up giving up a break going the other way, part of the cost of doing business, because if you sit back, you are going to give the chance to the opponent who's down 3-0 to come back on you. And I'm sure it's a constant discussion among coaching staffs to try and find the answer of how you keep your players pushing up the ice. And we saw it again today. And as much as it might be consternation for coaches, it's fantastic for fans. I was, checking on the game because I knew I was going to be coming on with you when it was over. And when it was 3-0, I was kind of just like in and out. I have other things to do.
You can't check out anymore.
You can't. Like, that's why you keep checking in now, right? And it was 3-1. And I was like, oh, I'm going to watch the last bit here. And they get the goal. And now you're like, okay, I have to watch now. It's fantastic stuff. Like in terms of a trend in the entertainment value of hockey, it's been a marvelous development over the last 10 years or so. That we've seen these 3-0 leads evaporate, and it just makes for really, really compelling, entertaining hockey. And we saw it again today. And what, man, Drake Batherson, come on. He took over the game like the last 5 or 10 minutes of the third. And then of course he pots the winner on the power play in OT. He was a beast. He was getting shots. Did you see that body? About, I don't know, 30 seconds left in the third period.
Yep. It set up
flies in there and flattens the Swedish defender behind the net. And a few seconds later, he winds up getting the puck back down there behind the net and sets up Dylan Cousins. I thought Cousins had a rough go of it. He was having some difficulty there on the late power play handling the puck. Didn't like some of the decisions. And then he winds up with the puck on his blade at the hash mark with a few seconds left in regulation, thanks to that great work by Batherson, and can't finish it off then. But to me, Drake Batherson just took over that game. I know Barzal wound up being the player of the game, I think, for Canada. But for me, it was Drake Batherson. Like, he just found another gear, and it was everything. I tweeted that. He was physical. He had his head up. He was making plays. He was taking shots. That was just fantastic stuff.
Before we move, too far in, I just want to shout out Matt Hamer, who predicted this exact result, saying that Sweden would, well, at the time when I got in, it was 2-0 Sweden, and it was 2 minutes into the game or whatever it was. It was real early.
Yep.
And he said, it's going to go to 3-0, and then Canada's going to have a great comeback, and you're going to have overtime on your hands.
So, wow.
Matt Hamer.
Nicely played.
New El Predicto.
Oh, he's stolen the handle.
I think he has to, does he not? Yeah. That's a pretty good one.
That's a very good one.
In the first period.
Like very early on. So, okay. Matt, this is for you.
He's probably napping now.
I got a text message from him at the end of that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Attaboy, Hammer. All right, do we have to take a break here, Kenny? We typically... Yeah, let's take a break here, and then we'll reset things up, get into a little bit of Drake Batherson talk. We'll look at last night's 5-4 Blues win over the Avalanche in overtime and start looking ahead to tonight's games. A couple of big games in the National Hockey League, Game 5s. Hurricanes-Rangers has been a homer series in this one and for the Hurricanes in general. They've only won at home, and they've only lost on the road. And then it's the Battle of Alberta at 9:30. We'll get into that. Dean Brown at 1 on a shortened edition of In the Box on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome back to In the Box here on TSN 1200. Before we kind of get more into the sports, CJ, just wanted to ask you how you're doing these last week or so, because I know the reason you're in today is Steve Lloyd obviously dealing with a lot of tree on his roof and in his house. So tough week for sure for the Lloyd family and many others, of course, throughout the city. So just wanted to check in on you. How have you been doing this last week or so?
Count myself very lucky that it was relatively unscathed. Power was in and out. Phone was a little wonky for a bit. Small inconveniences compared to what our friend Lloyd is going through and what so many other thousands of people in the National Capital Region have had to wrestle with over the last few days, and sounds like we'll have to continue to battle through. So, certainly our thoughts are with those people. Hopefully, if they've got a battery powered radio, yes, those still exist. I used one the other day. We can help them a little bit get through this time by talking about some sports and some other things in the world that, might make it a little bit of a distraction at least.
Yeah, well said. Kenny Wells, I will go to you one more time here. You're getting lots of love early before we get into the hockey talk. Josh says, it's Thursday. Are we finally going to get a crotchety F1 insider segment? Zenny was pretty much ignored all week. So Kenny, if you have anything to get off your chest F1 related, now is your opportunity. I'm not here tomorrow, so I don't think you'll get an opportunity tomorrow.
Well, the race last week in Spain, I caught the second half of it. My power came back on midway through the race, so I was able to catch the second half of it, and by that time, a lot of the excitement had already gone away. It was a good race and better than expected. And I think we'll need the same type of thing this week in Monaco because it is typically a very boring race. All the action happens on Saturday with qualifying, which is the most exciting part. But as I told Dean Brown yesterday, there's an 80% chance of thunder showers in Monaco on Sunday at this time. Now, a wet race doesn't mean an exciting race, but changeable weather means an exciting race, no matter where the track surface is or where the track is. So I'm hoping that we see not flat out rain the entire time, but changeable weather conditions over the course in Monaco. But I'll definitely be tuning in on Saturday for qualifying, and in all likelihood watch the race on Sunday, but not high expectations heading into this week.
Now, you say that the rain, maybe you can just expand on that. Is that just because of changeable conditions mean trying to decide what kind of tires you want to use? When do you make a move for racing slicks or whatever? Is that just why you think it's the changing weather conditions make for a better race?
That's right. Yeah. It's all about strategy at that point. And when they have to move on from either the slick tire to the wet tire, like we saw in Russia last year with Lando Norris leading the race, decided to stay out on the slick tire and it cost him. He dropped back a lot and that allowed Lewis Hamilton to pick up, I think it was his 100th career F1 win. And it goes the other way as well, going from wets to slicks and when that changeover point is. And when it's just a flat-out wet race, it's the same as a dry race. And especially around that track where there isn't a whole lot of passing options, a lot of the overtakes or change in positions is done in the pit lane. So you have to, if you have more than one pit stop, like we saw last week in Spain where Max Verstappen had to stop multiple times on his way to a race win, it makes for more exciting action, even at a place like that. So when you're changing over from wet to dry or dry to wet, it allows more chaos to occur throughout the race.
Yeah, the Monaco, I had a chance as a kid to actually go and walk on the track. We went on a study visit to France when I was in high school. And okay, yes, that is a long time ago. I was an F1 fan even way back then. That would have been the 1970s. And to have a chance to
the Netflix series.
slightly before, yes. And to have a chance to actually be there, stood right down by the marina where you see the cars go by after they come out of the tunnel. So it's always been one of those races that kind of has a little bit more of a connection for me, having had the opportunity to be there in Monte Carlo. And I always look forward to it, although Kenny's point is a great one. It's basically a parade. I mean, barring somebody doing something stupid or being really unfortunate, it's such a technical track. It's so difficult to pass on. There's so many turns, the narrow streets, you know, one of those races, such a great tradition in F1 for me. And you know, as an older guy who looks back on, you know, a pretty pretty lengthy experience with being a fan of sports and working in sports, I feel like it's one of those, you know, throwback races. We've seen so many, you know, new age tracks built, just like we've seen all kinds of new stadia built, new arenas in the National Hockey League. For me, it's still great to be able to have that connection to, you know, the early days of F1 racing. So Monaco is always a special one for me. I almost always try to take in the race and at least be there for the end of it. But it takes me back to the early days of my F1 fandom. And it's just so cool to see them actually race. That's where I was going, was to actually see them race through the streets of a city like that. It goes back to the roots of the sport.
It really does. And the fact that the course and the track hasn't changed dramatically, if at all, because you can't. There's buildings all around.
Yeah.
It's within the city. It's within the city. So you can't do anything else to that layout. It is incredibly special. It's one of those tracks that I don't want to see ever removed from the calendar.
Right. Bang on.
But the reason why it's bad racing now is because the cars are so big. They're bigger than SUVs.
Yeah.
So they go out there and they're wide, they're long, there just isn't enough.
There's no room.
There's no room to do anything. Yeah. So it's unfortunate, but you don't want to see that track removed. And the one thing that I will throw out there is that the pole sitter for the Spanish Grand Prix has won more often at the Spanish Grand Prix than the pole sitter at the Monaco Grand Prix. So there is more lead changes. And then a lot of that goes to the history, as you spoke about, CJ, of it's been around for so long, and whereas the Spanish Grand Prix hasn't been around nearly as long. So I think it was 72% of the time the pole sitter from the Spanish Grand Prix wins the race, which is just an incredible amount of times. And it's not nearly as high for Monaco. So there are some lead changes, but I think that a lot of that goes back to when the cars were smaller and overtakes, while still difficult, were a little easier.
Yeah. It's just, it's the whole, to me, that's what F1 is about. It's a rich person sport. Let's face it. Monte Carlo is a rich person's city to me. And maybe that's part of the romance or the appeal of it. Was that, to me, Monaco always kind of summed up what F1 was all about. The jet set people who come in and you see those, the $500 million yachts in the marina. And
it's an event for rich and famous to be there.
Exactly. It's literally for the jet set.
And kind of, not to take away from your point, but just the Miami, it felt like that for Miami. Miami's it's completely different, but it's a bit of a rich town as well, a rich city.
Yeah.
And you saw so many huge celebrities and some of them follow F1 regularly, but there were for sure a ton that were there for the event specifically. Like, everyone's going to be here. All the celebs are going to be here. It's the new thing in town with F1 coming to Miami, and then we'll see Vegas next year. It's
a race for the beautiful people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And you're right about South Beach and Miami fitting that characterization, fitting that description perfectly. But, Monaco's always a special stop for me in terms of F1. And I was always a fan of the open wheel racing. So Memorial Day weekend, you had the Indy 500, and that was like the pinnacle of, motor car racing for me was when you had Monaco and the Indy 500.
All right, we'll take a break. And on the other side, if you want to text in at 12-1200, where standard text messaging rates apply, you can weigh in on our web poll question, which I will ask CJ in the next segment, based on Pierre Dorion's comments. What should the Sens do with the number 7 pick? So we'll touch on that. You can text us 12-1200 if you want to answer that. Make the pick, trade for a top 6 forward, or trade for a top 4 D. I'll ask CJ next and touch on Drake Batherson's heroics at the World Hockey Championships as In the Box continues on TSN 1200. Welcome back to In the Box here on TSN 1200. Every time I hear that song, I think of the program and I think of Jim Rome.
Mm.
Welcome to the jungle. The TSN 1200 tool and equipment store web poll question of the day, CJ, reads, based on Pierre Dorion's comments as he joined In the Box yesterday, AJ and Brad Fritch.
Yep.
What should the Sens do with the number 7 pick? And the choices are make the pick, trade the pick for a top 6 forward, or trade the pick for a top 4 D. How did you vote?
I voted for the top 4 D. Now, does that really make sense? I have to pick one of the 3 picks, right? Choices. To me, you've got a logjam now of mediocre NHL defensemen on this team. So Is there a need for a top 4D? Yes, there is. So if I have to pick one of those three options, I'm going for the top 4D, because I will continue to bang the drum of this team needing to improve defensively before it does anything. And sitting here right now today, there's no way I can see this team being a playoff contender next year with the group of defensemen that it has now. And that's not putting it all on the group of defensemen. We're talking about team defense. There's no question, as we saw today, with what Batherson did for Canada at the World Championships, you know, going into beast mode down the stretch, getting the winner in overtime and completing a comeback from a 3-0 deficit. They've got the offensive talent on this team, and many might argue acquiring that kind of talent and acquiring those kind of assets while you have to subject you and your fans to a lot of pain to do that. You might argue that the hardest part's done. I'm not sure that it is. Figuring out how to keep the puck out of your net for this team now is job one, in my opinion. So in the context of this poll, I would say that if you have the opportunity to trade for, and let's a legitimate top 4D here.
Yes.
A legitimate top 4D. That doesn't solve your problems now of having this lineup of less than top 4D lined up behind those guys with, you know, Zaitsev and Hamonic and Brännström. I don't even think Holden really is a top 4D in the National Hockey League on a good team. So, you know, there you go. But if you've got that asset at 7, that for me is the most pressing need, because the most pressing need of the team is cutting the goals against down. Now, is acquiring a top 4D going to be the complete and final answer to that issue? Hell no. We don't know what's going to happen with the goaltending again. Pierre Dorion, you know, on yesterday says Matt Murray will be over the concussion and ready to come back and fight for a job in the fall. Okay. Do we have, you know, what evidence do we have that he's going to be able to come back and be a guy who can play it? And he's had gusts up to being a legitimate number one goaltender. We saw that for brief periods. But I'm going to remain highly skeptical until he does it, that he's going to be able to stay healthy enough to be able to provide that level of goaltending on a consistent basis. So there's that question mark.
Were you and at least...
And just a thought on it, you know, Forsberg, you know, probably the brightest, maybe the brightest spot for the team at this point in his career, evolving into their starting goaltender out of necessity and giving them some really, really solid games on a consistent basis. So if Matt Murray can, you know, and maybe that's the best situation for Anton Forsberg, is to have Matt Murray come back healthy and be able to have a battle, because, you know, we've all seen it when a guy's a backup and now all of a sudden he's thrust into the number one role. That's a way different mindset and a way different demand on a player than when he's just, you know, as Forsberg has been for most of his career until last season, a career backup. Being asked to be the number one and carry the load every night is much different. So to me, there's so many questions still about the goaltending, and we won't even get into Filip Gustavsson where he might be at.
I'll save my follow-up for you for Dean, because we'll take a break and we'll get Dean and we'll start with Sens talk. Sure. So I did have a follow, but we'll just play it out with Dean. So we'll take a break. Okay. Our Sens insider will join us on the other side. We'll talk Sens as well as what we saw last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, what we're expecting tonight, and Canada and Drake Batherson at the World Hockey Championships is 1 hour down, one more to go, CJ. This tough, grueling... abbreviated edition of In the Box here on TSN 1200.